Hey everyone, welcome back to Outside of Work, where we explore who we truly are beyond our job titles. Oh yeah, I'm trying out this new tagline now. Y'all like it? Let me know in the comments. Anyways, I'm so excited for today's guest, Aaron Robacher. Aaron has been my neighbor since 2006. He's known me since I was in middle school, and now I'm 30. It's so trippy to be adults at the same time with him, but also liberating in a way. Talking to Aaron has always felt like talking to a friend, not someone who's basically my parents' age mate. So in this conversation, he breaks down why he's glad he got laid off from a job he's had for over 20 years, how he stays constantly curious. This man, since I've known him, seems to just always be outside, racing his car or fixing his car, going mudding, cleaning his car after going mudding, playing basketball with me and my siblings, all the things. He has so many hobbies that now he's indulging in it even more with all this free time. Finding love again and what it's like raising three boys. That's right, three boys. All right, but for now, enjoy the episode. Here's Aaron. Hey everyone, welcome back to Outside of Work. Hey, Jendrickson Eddie here. I almost forgot to say, this was one of the first episodes I recorded for Outside of Work, and I was still figuring out the audio and mics and everything like that, so the audio quality definitely sounds different than what you've been hearing lately when I finally figured it out. Nonetheless, it was an amazing conversation, great content that I can't wait for you guys to hear. Okay, all right, back to the episode. I am joined here today by my neighbor, Aaron Robacher.
Hello.
And thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
We've been neighbors since 2006. I was in middle school, and now I'm almost 30.
It's hard to believe that.
How old do you feel now?
It's hard to believe. I'm 50, and I don't feel it.
You look good for 50.
Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So it's been almost 20 years we've known each other.
Almost. Yeah. And in that time, you know, I've loved growing up with you and your boys and everything. And so it's just been so good. But, you know, you're coming straight from your garage,
as usual.
That's the place I would always see you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, nowadays, always that we could find you in the garage. Yeah. What were you doing?
So I was actually hanging a pull-up bar.
Really?
Yeah. So I have one already, but it's sort of in the middle of the, you know, the spot where I park one of the cars. Mm-hmm. And now that I have my race car in the garage, I need to like have a spot in between the cars to do pull-ups. So I figured out a way. There's no good place to hang it there. So I had to like mount boards and then mount the pull-up bar to the boards and everything. So it's a bit of a process.
That's so interesting. You trying to get jacked for the summer?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, like, gotta do what you can.
Like, I gotta look good.
I've seen you in your garage working out too.
That's true.
It's a good thing to do.
It is. Well, that's awesome. Yesterday was Father's Day.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you do anything special with your boys?
Me and the three boys went to my parents' house to celebrate with my stepfather, and you know, it's always nice to hang out with the family, celebrate both for me and for my stepfather.
So
it was a good day.
Yeah. What'd you guys do?
Not really all that much. Just, went for a walk, hung out, made a nice meal. Mm-hmm. Didn't stay for that long. Nothing exciting.
Yeah.
But just hanging around the house.
That just sounds relaxing, really.
Yeah, it was great.
To be with family and the boys and everything.
Yeah, and I had taken the top off the Jeep because it's nice weather lately. So we cruised out there with the top down, and that's just fun. I look forward to this time of year so much.
Right? I was going to say.
because of that as well as other reasons, you know?
It's awesome. And then, you said you also have a sports car. Like, is it a Beamer still? Or?
It is, yeah. So it's my race car. It's an older car, like a 2002 3 Series, a 330.
Oh, wow.
And there's a racing class specifically for that car. It's called Spec E46, which is, all the cars are that, you know, vintage, like, you know, between 2001 and 2005.
Yeah.
A BMW with the same engine, same everything, like the same weight and the same power. And that way there's parity. Like every car is about the same speed, and it all comes down to the driver.
Really?
In a lot of the classes, it just becomes an arms race of who can spend the most money and make their car the fastest. So this is more of like a pure driver's class, which is what appealed to me. And also, it sort of has a ceiling on how much money you're realistically going to spend. You set the car up and then it's done. It's not like you can chase, you know, that last tenth of a second with $10,000 worth of aero or something like that. None of that exists. So
why did you choose to get an older model instead of like one of these newer ones?
Because they're much, much, well, first of all, they're much, much cheaper, but they're also much easier to work on. Oh. The newer cars are all, you know, basically you're using a laptop rather than a wrench, you know. There's just not much you can do without some really serious like programming to the ECU and that type of thing.
Interesting. So. My boyfriend will love this conversation because a lot of these words are ECU. And
it's like the brain of the car.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
That's so cool. Are you going to take it out to race anytime this summer?
Yeah. I've been doing some track days for a couple years now with it. I mean, I've been doing track days for maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
But with this car, a couple years now, and I've just been slowly building it up to get it ready. So I think it's pretty much ready now. It's got all the safety gear, roll cage. I have to finish like the fire suppression system and that type of thing. Cause you have to have all that to race. It's a requirement for safety. So just a couple more things to finish up.
But it seems like it's fun for you. It's not really like much of a chore.
It can be, you know, the driving is the fun part.
Okay.
There are projects that are fun, and then there are projects that are tedious and bust your knuckles and everything. But overall, it's, you know, I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy the process.
That's
at least
true.
Somehow.
Yeah. So handy. I could listen. That's a whole skill I do not have. That's awesome. And so this conversation really is about who we are outside of our job titles, right? Who we truly are. And so how would you describe yourself?
That's a good question. Well, I certainly wouldn't describe myself by any type of job title to start with. That's just never been my way to be about my job and what I do, because I guess I've never had a job that I've been super passionate about.
Interesting.
You know?
Okay.
So I would probably describe myself more in terms of what I'm interested in outside of work, what I like to do. You know, I'm sort of adventurous. I'm outgoing and like to make new friends. I like to, you know, try new things, learn new skills.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for some new way to kind of be better than I was last year, if that's possible as we get older. I'm more about that than, you know, the job title. I worked at Citi for a long, long time, as you know, and had a number of different roles there, like IT, information security, project management, risk management. And at no point during that time, when I met someone new and they said, "Oh, tell me about yourself," did I say, "Well, I worked for Citi"? You know, it's just wasn't where I went, you know?
Oh, you're different than me then, because
You pursued a career that was like really in line with your interests. So
I was I would say so for sure, because like that was something, you know, that is something that I'm passionate about, telling people stories and meeting people. And for a time it felt like it was definitely a part of me. But now looking back, I'm just kind of like, maybe I made it too much a part of my identity. So I got laid off, I was like,
"You lost part
of
your
identity. Who is Gentrix?" I realized how big of a part of my identity I made it. So much so that like I'm missing events with my family and my friends, and just, you know, working crazy hours and just like, you know, pursuing this like perpetual climb. And so in a way, it kind of became more detrimental.
Interesting. Yeah. So, but I think there's a difference between having an identity that includes your career and your vocation more so than just the job.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the job you were doing, that job, that company, that, you know, specific role wasn't so much your identity as this.
Yeah.
You know, and you can, you know, losing that job or leaving that job isn't the same as, you know, saying goodbye to this, you know.
It's true. So that's a good point.
Yeah, hopefully you don't feel like you've lost too much.
You know, I think I'm slowly trying to get it back. And I think by talking to people like you and to all these other people that I'm eventually going to be speaking to, I think that'll help me get closer to figuring out who it is that I am, you know?
Yeah.
Because maybe one thing is like I'm very family oriented. Mm-hmm. When I have friends, like you are my friend, I will, you know, I'll ride and die for you. I love meeting people. I love running. So I say that's kind of part of my identity. But I don't know, with this, it just feels like a big chunk is lost. So I've gotta figure some stuff out.
Yeah,
exactly. I do love that that you didn't define yourself by your role at City. But like, can you tell me a bit more about that? Like, what kind of roles did you hold? And then like, how did that change over time?
Sure. So, I mean, it started sort of right after college. Yeah. I was actually a psychology major in college. I don't know if I ever mentioned that.
No.
Yeah. So I thought about going into that field, you know, getting a master's, maybe getting a PhD, being a therapist, being mm-hmm. some sort of a psychologist in some capacity working in that field. But in college, I worked in a ski shop, and mm-hmm. I actually really liked that, too. It was a mm-hmm. super fun job. So when I graduated, a couple of my part-time colleagues at the ski shop had real jobs, so to speak. And they were like, you know, we're hiring, you know, we need other people to be like project managers working for, you know, then it was Smith Barney. Now it all kind of merged into Citigroup.
I see.
And I thought, well, yeah, sure. Why not? I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
And 27 years later.
27 years later.
Yeah. I mean, I just did that, you know, from one job to one role within that company to the next, starting with project management, mm-mm. sort of in the IT area, and then moving like into solid IT, and then information security. And all along, you know, I'm sort of like advancing.
Yeah.
So at no time did I have this feeling like I'm on the wrong path. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? This isn't what I set out to do mm-hmm. because, you know, I was advancing and the money kept improving and everything. So I thought, well, you know, this is good enough. I don't hate it.
Oh, okay. That's good. Right.
I don't hate it.
So let's keep going.
You know, and it's tapping into some set of skills that I have that I didn't really know I had, I guess. But also at no point was I like passionate about it. And you know, that made it a bit of a grind a lot of times.
Hmm. Do you think it's a myth, like, to have passion in the thing you do? Like, you know what I mean? Because I feel like oftentimes people are like, oh, you know, do what you're passionate about, do what you love.
Do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly. Right? Do you think that's a myth or is that true?
I don't think it's a myth. I just don't think it's very common. And I think you might also have to have a certain type of personality to feel that way. And then I also think maybe some of the people who claim that are just sort of blowing sunshine at you.
Interesting.
You know? Because work is hard. You get paid for it because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few jobs out there where people, I think, truly love what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's just coming from a guy who's never found that magic formula. But I know from personal experience, for a while I had a little side business teaching competitive shooting because I was super into that for mm-hmm. a while. And, you know, there was a part of me that thought, oh, you know, maybe there's a future in this and maybe I can, you know, someday, you know, have this be my primary source of income, which wasn't really practical because, you know, in the climate today, you know, there's just so much negativity around, you know, that industry that it was, you know, just kind of problematic to begin with. But the other thing I realized was, even though I love doing that, going and doing it when I had to rather than when I wanted to became a grind.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of thought at some point, this isn't as fun as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just, you know, that was part of the realization that I had that maybe my job doesn't have to be my calling, my passion. Maybe it can just be something that is, you know, good enough and I don't hate it and it makes, you know, enough money to pay the bills.
Exactly. It supplements life, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Work to live rather than live to work.
That part, which I think a lot of us need to do a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
If we're in that position, I guess. And thank you for bringing up the fact that you were an instructor one time teaching people how to shoot. How did you get into that?
So just shooting for fun, with friends.
When did it start? Like college or?
No, it started much later than that. It started, I guess maybe around 2007. I guess it was around 2007. I had a couple friends who shot just for fun. And, I shot with them one time and was terrible at it. And I thought, that doesn't feel right. I feel like I should be better at this. So I literally went home and thought about it, kind of like was processing like how the mechanics of, getting a sight picture and shooting accurately should go. And I sort of figured it out in my mind and then went and did it again. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden everything went much better. And I thought, actually, this is a lot of fun. And I think I watched, there was a show on one of the outdoor channels that covered this, the competitions that I ended up doing. And I thought, oh, that looks amazing. That's like the true test of being good at this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the practical aspect of like, running around and shooting on the move and shooting moving targets and shooting quickly and all the practical aspects of what people think of when they think of, when you watch an action adventure movie.
Yeah, like
Keanu
Reeves.
Right, like John Wick. So Keanu Reeves trained with a guy I used to shoot with.
That's crazy.
Taron Butler. Taron Butler is one of the best in the world. But Keanu Reeves actually got pretty darn good.
Wow.
Right?
It shows in the movies. I mean, it might still be acting, but I'm like, you have your posture and everything right.
I could show you a video of him training with Taron and learning all that stuff.
Wow.
And he got to be a pretty decent shooter. He would compete in some of the matches that I never shot against him or anything, but those same type of matches, he would go and compete in them, and he would do fairly well. I mean, he wasn't winning, but
hey, it's great practice, right?
But like a mid pack shooter in those types of competitions to the lay person looks like the best shooter I've ever seen, because it's just a set of skills that most people have no idea what's even involved in getting them. Yeah. So he's the real deal anyway, so I thought that looked like a ton of fun, and I, practiced for years and started, getting really, really into it. And eventually, I would go to matches and people would say, can you teach me how to do that?
Yeah. Were you winning these matches?
Yeah. I got to the point where
humble
here. Yeah. The local matches, I would do real well at the local matches. Usually me or one of a couple of my buddies would win.
Nice.
A lot of the local guys coming up would say, can you teach me how to do that? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, sure. And at some point I just thought, why don't I start a little business and do this, teach people how to do this for fun. And it was fun for a while, but like I said, got to be a little bit of a grind doing it on, other people's calendar rather than just when I felt like going.
Exactly. That is so cool though. I remember you telling me about going to these shooting ranges and being able to do it. So you literally have a certain type of skill. Like
I do. And I have that personality where when I jump into something, I want to go all in, whether it's shooting or racing or even, you've seen my Jeep.
It's rigged up.
Rock climbing and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is I tend to jump in with both feet and get super into it. And then I oftentimes end up being an instructor. Like I'm a high performance driving instructor too now. Yeah.
You like get so good that eventually people are like, teach me.
I guess in my mind, it's the culmination of, once you, you have the benefit of learning and participating with people who are better than you, learning from them.
Yeah.
Then the sort of culmination of that is to then give back to the community and teach. Like when I teach the high performance driving, we don't get paid instructors. Mm. We get free track time, which is
great.
That's good because it can be $1,000 a weekend, and now it's free, but it's not like we're being paid, it's just, we're given time on the track. So it's really, instructing a lot of time is kind of in the car is kind of a thankless, high risk job. So you really have to be doing it for a higher purpose rather than just, because you want the money, because there isn't any.
I was going to say, there is no money in it. You really got to do it for the love of it at the end of the day.
Exactly.
And it also makes me just think that you must have a different type of brain, because it's one thing to take something on and be like, okay, I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
It's another thing to try and master that skill.
Yes, to master it. And the other part of that I would say is there are lots of people who are really good at things.
Yeah.
And then there are lots of people who are good at teaching things, but it's not all that common to be able to get really good at something and teach it.
Exactly.
You know, to be able to break it down in simple terms, to be able to really like coach someone, mm-hmm. not just explain what you do and then say, now do what I did, but actually to, you know, work with them hands on, mm-hmm. break it down and sort of guide them through the learning process. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why I do that in a lot of different things, mm-hmm. you know, shooting and cars and other stuff, okay. is because I guess I do just have that side of me that likes to coach and yeah. help people. You know, I'm a dad, so, you know,
yeah.
it kind of comes with the territory, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly.
But I can remember even doing that, you know, before. Years and years ago. The first time I remember ever teaching anything, I was in middle school and I learned yeah. to juggle. We had to,
oh my
you
gosh.
Know, do something in class where you had to learn a skill or something.
Yeah.
And I learned to juggle and got pretty good at it. And next thing I knew, I was at the fair teaching juggling lessons to other kids. And that was like the first moment where I had like, you know, this is odd, you know,
yeah.
seemed like a minute ago I was learning this and now I'm teaching it to others. How did this happen?
What? But
I guess all throughout my life, I've just learned a skill and then taught it to someone else.
And then taught it to other people. That's awesome. Yeah. How long did it take you to learn how to juggle?
Not long. I was young. So, you know, you learn things fast.
Yeah. When
you're young. I was
you got
a kid.
More time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a pretty, pretty quick learning curve. It's not hard. Juggling is not that hard.
You say. You can teach me later.
All right. We'll give it a shot.
Exactly. And so to go back to talking about Citibank, you were there for 27 years. Mm-hmm. And then a couple months ago, you got laid off.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah.
Did you ever think that would happen?
It wasn't a shock because there's a lot of restructuring and my division was eliminated entirely. So I saw it coming in this particular instance, mm-hmm. but over the years, I've seen it happen so many times that I would have been pretty naive to think, oh, it can't happen to me. It wasn't personal, you know, our whole division, you know, was eliminated. Mm. And there were positions that you could sort of slot into, which I actually did do for a while, but it wasn't a great fit, because there were two parts of the bank under this division. And when they eliminated the division, you had to fall within either, you know, one yeah. arm of the bank or the other. And each of those arms had all their people in place.
Yeah. So really
so
there's no space.
There wasn't a lot of space. And I actually did find a slot, but I didn't like it. Mm. I wasn't happy there. And I could see right away that I was sort of clashing with the person who had now become my boss.
Yeah.
So I knew that it wasn't going to be a good fit. And to be honest, I was actually sort of hoping that the end result of that would be a layoff because, you know, that sort of freed me to look for something new. Mm-hmm. I'd been at Citi for so long that generally in a big company like that, you earn two weeks pay per year of service as severance.
You've been there 27 years.
So 20, yeah, I mean, one year as a consultant that yeah. didn't count, but the 26 years nice. Did count. So that's exactly a year, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's a severance that's hard to just ignore and like voluntarily leave for a different job yeah. because I could voluntarily leave, go to a different bank, work there and maybe get laid off in a few years and then I have very little mm-hmm. to show for it. But if I get laid off at Citi first, have a severance, mm-hmm. and then make a move, that's much better, right? Right? So for that reason, I was actually sort of hoping that, you know, this is the time yeah. when I make that move.
In a way, you found some positivity in getting laid right. off, right?
Right?
And so what new, like, perspectives or, you know, directions have you been thinking of?
Huh. You know, to be honest, I've sort of taken a pause in focusing on my career. I've just been enjoying, you know, a couple, you know, several weeks of, you know, changing gears, catching my breath,
focusing on, you know, a long list of to-dos that I've had for a while that I've wanted to, you know, to pay attention to. And I'm starting to feel like it's probably time that I, you know, get online and start getting, you know, resumes out to different jobs and that sort of thing. But I haven't done much yet.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I love this.
I am enjoying the hell out of it. I mean, we've bumped into each other in the cul-de-sac a few times and I'm just like, hey, what's up?
Right?
Walking around in shorts and flip-flops and
just living life. Just happy. Yeah, I love it.
And I got to say, I've never been happier. But it's, I mean, you know, when I tell people that I've been laid off and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, no, it's, I'm feeling pretty good
about
it right
now.
Exactly.
It's a good thing.
Now in 6 months time, maybe I won't be, but I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully things will work out when I'm ready and you know, take the plunge and start sending resumes out. But there's a couple things that I would look for in the next, the next endeavor. You know, I think that, more important than the salary, you know, you get used to a certain salary and, you know, 26 years with a bank, you know, the salary kind of, you know, ratchets up over the years. So it's, you know, it can be a little bit of golden handcuffs.
Yeah.
But more important than that, I think, would be being in an industry that I'm intrinsically interested in, even if, you know, like I was saying, every job is work.
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't, I'm not going to expect that I'm like loving what I do.
Right.
Skipping into work every day. Right.
Waking up and popping out of bed. Like, let's do this today. Yeah.
But I've never really been intrinsically interested in banking, finance, that sort of thing. Just never been my thing, but I love cars. Yeah. Right. So if I could have, you know, some sort of a job at, like, let's say BMW, who has headquarters in Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey.
Oh,
and
you know,
I've been passionate about BMWs for 20 some years now. So, you know, if I found a role, that taps into my skills at a company like that, I feel like that would give me a little more purpose. Even if I'm just a cog in the background, sort of collaborating on some new widget or marketing or idea, I would feel more purpose if it were to produce something that excites me rather than a new financial product
that
I couldn't care less about.
Yeah.
You know? So that is a goal, is to find something along those lines. But, you know, more like logistically, I'd like the, you know, the home base to be in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Because city, of course, is in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And while I had been working from home full time for several years, since even before COVID and then all through COVID.
Okay.
City was, as are most of the other big companies, making a big push to pull everyone back into the office, at least on a hybrid schedule.
Yeah.
So they wanted people in 3 days a week. Oh, and 3 days a week, as you know, from
is
a grind.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of seat
time. You have to get up at least 3 hours before. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It took me 3 hours to get in sometimes if I was going anywhere near rush hour. So I'd like to find something in New Jersey. So those are kind of my basic tenets for the search when the time comes.
That totally makes sense. And then to find something at least you like a little bit more than banking and numbers and all that, that will fit perfectly into it. You mentioned that you have like a list of to-dos that you've been wanting to do. What's on that list?
Well, I mean, get the race car finished, Jeep projects, house projects, mostly that kind of stuff. Shooting projects, there's always work to be done on race guns, just like there is on race cars. Guns that you use to shoot competitions with.
Do they have like faster triggers or something, or like
You could say that, just, you know, smoother, lighter, just like really precise. They're like a race car of a gun, you know, in a manner of speaking. So, in all honesty, I have a girlfriend who, we're pretty close and we spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's been
I love that.
A great way that I've been spending a lot of my time too. Yeah, so
exactly.
Yeah, so there's that.
So do you have any summer plans with the boys?
Yes. So actually next month is my mom's 80th birthday.
80 years old. Wow. Yeah.
Bless. So we'll get together with her, you know, get some family together. Mm-hmm. And I think we're planning to do sort of a small family reunion at a little resort in Pennsylvania.
Nice.
That my mom likes. So we'll hang out there.
Nice.
So yeah, that's, you know, that's coming next month. In terms of stuff I'll do without the boys, my girlfriend and I are planning to go to Aruba, which I've never been.
It's hot. It's like a desert, hot, right? Exactly. Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's not like the rest of the Caribbean, which is more like a
tropical
hot, humid. Right? And it's okay. You can like handle it. Yeah. Aruba, just
hot.
Yeah. Just be ready. And you can drive the whole island in one day.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
It's small.
There's no traffic lights
it's
either.
It's all the way down by like Venezuela.
Exactly.
Right?
So it's by sort South
of
America.
Proof, which is nice. It's kind of tucked away out of the path
literally
of all
random.
The storms. But
Dutch. The Dutch took it over. So a lot of the words are in Dutch. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know.
That's
you would never think. It's like so random.
Like 13 vowels in a row.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
To like look for stuff. Aging. And so oh my gosh. When are you guys going to Aruba? That's so fun.
So the plan is she's actually competing in Miss New Jersey.
I'm sorry. So you have a supermodel as a girlfriend? Oh, excuse me.
To me, she definitely is. Yeah. But so that's next weekend, and we're gonna probably go. I would say maybe late July. Mm-hmm. I think at this point is just sort of like blow off steam because that's been a grind for her.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit for me to a lesser extent, you know, trying to help out and support where I can. But
it's so tough.
Yeah, I know. It's so tough. So, that's the plan is we'll go down there and just sort of relax.
Nice.
So that's on my calendar. There's a couple of races that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe a couple of like Jeep off-roading trips. So. Mm. You know, hey, you know, I don't know where love I found it. The time to do any of this while I was working.
But you made that's the thing I love, though. Like I would always see you in your garage. I would always, you know, during pandemic, I would see you on your uniwheel going up and down.
The one wheel. That's right.
You know, you were always doing something. So it's like it's almost like you made a concerted effort to do. I don't know whether it was, you know, intentional or not, but. That's what it seemed like to me. I was like, this man is always doing something.
That's right. I'm always doing something. And I like to, you know, try and have a little fun, you know, whenever I can. And one wheel is a ton of fun. You know, it's like the most fun you can have on just like riding around the neighborhood doing that. It's amazing.
Doing on a hill though is wild. I would definitely bust face.
It is pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, people like break stuff all the time. I'm careful, but as long as you don't like push the speed, it's usually fine. If you try and go like max speed, then that's when problems
then
happen.
Then it's a problem.
Yeah, no, it's a ton of fun. So, yeah, I mean, I like to learn new things and challenge myself and you know, kind of have these little adventures. And my girlfriend is actually very similar. She wants to learn to scuba dive. And I have a scuba diving certification, but I've never gone.
We're just going to go down the list of things that you have. You're like, I also like my professional bowler.
No, definitely not. I'm a terrible bowler. But
scuba diving.
The list
goes
on. Yeah. But I wanted to do it. I got certified maybe 2016, I think. And
nice.
I've just never had occasion to go.
Yeah.
And I'm not really interested in going to like the Jersey Shore and diving in cold, murky water. So
you'd be seeing people's like leftovers down there, like plastics. Right.
And there's sharks and it's you can't see, you know, when you dive, they do what's called like rope dives where they drop an anchor and you sort of keep the rope in your hand and just go to, because you can't see anything.
That's crazy.
You know, otherwise you'll just sort of drift away from the boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the Caribbean, you can see for a mile and it's like, you know, warm and nice. And so, okay, that's why I wanted to learn to do it, not to go hang out in Jersey. So I've just never had the chance to do it. And when she mentioned she was interested in doing it, I'm like, oh, let's get you certified and then we'll go in Aruba.
I was going to say, you guys going to do it in Aruba?
That's the plan.
Is she certified now?
She's going to do, we're planning to get her certified the weekend after 4th of July, I think.
beach.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
So they can do it all in a weekend now. When I did it, it was like either three or four consecutive weekends for a couple hours each. But this is like a crash course all in one weekend. So
and
that's
Aruba's
the plan.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
The water is gorgeous.
Yeah, that's the idea.
You guys are going to have so much fun. Oh my gosh. Let me stow away. That's going to be so great. And so now I'm curious, Aaron, how do you define success?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I wouldn't define it in the traditional sense of, you know, cars and money and a big house. Because sort of in keeping with what we've been talking about, I think success is having a good balance of what you need and what makes you happy and a life with purpose, a life of connectedness to the extent that you like to be connected. You know, some people like to spend a lot of time with their friends, some people family, some people just with their significant other, but whatever that formula is that works for you, you know, having the right balance and the capacity to maintain it in your life. For me, I like to have adventures. I like to go racing. I like to, you know, go on trips scuba diving. So, you know, that, you know, requires a little more, you know, time, effort and money, I guess. So, you know, maybe my balance requires a little more of that than some, but yeah, I would say success is, having achieved, you know, that point where you have the connectedness that you seek that works for you and you're able to maintain it without, you know, too much effort and, you know, stress.
Yeah, exactly. Even though your activities require a bit more, you know, time and stuff like that, I'm sure that when you eventually are like certified or finally you can make that shot easily and stuff, that's pretty successful.
It is. It's fun. It's fulfilling. And it's, you know, I think with a lot of sports, a lot of pro athletes, I've heard them sort of say like they win a championship and then they're like, now I feel kind of hollow and what next? Mm-hmm. So you can't, I think it's, this is going to sound trite because, you know, I think everyone knows this, but it's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't just say, well, my life's purpose is to get, you know, a scuba certification or to win this match or to win this, whatever. You have to enjoy the journey. And that's why I think that the balance is important, because if you lose, and this gets back to what you were saying with your job, you know, perhaps you were out of balance with the connectedness that you needed with your family.
Yeah.
If you were focusing so much on that and then things changed and then suddenly, you felt a little bit hollow,
like a failure.
Well,
in a little bit of a way.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that, but I mean,
but I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but obviously you're certainly not a failure. Yeah. But you know, to lose that sense of yourself, and having been out of balance and you sort of felt like a little bit exposed, in terms of your connectedness with your network, your friends and your family. So, to me, I think success is achieving what you need to sustain your lifestyle, your way of life, but while also maintaining all that connectedness.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. No, that totally makes sense. And I like the idea of, I mean, it is, you know, trite, but it's true. It's the journey.
It really is.
Yeah. Because then if you're always trying to aim for a certain goal, you're going to be disappointed.
Right.
If you never get it.
The easiest way I explain it to people sometimes is it's like with working out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you work out because you want to achieve a certain weight, let's say I want to be, you know, 185 pounds and you're working out and you're losing weight and then you get there and it's like, okay, I'm done. You stop. What happens?
You can gain it again.
Right. Yeah. So you have to find a routine that works for you that you can maintain, that is harmonious with your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's the journey. If it were just about the destination, you'd get there and then what?
And then what, right?
Yeah.
And what's your purpose now?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to someone who might be in the same position as you?
So the same position as me in terms of, you know, losing their job, needing a new job, but maybe not needing it like urgently.
Yeah.
Like you can take it. So my advice in that situation would be to, for me, I've very, very much enjoyed taking a beat and catching my breath first.
I don't know that I would necessarily advise that, because maybe not everyone needs that. Maybe, you know, I know other people, I mean, I know countless people at Citi who lost their job same time as me. And a lot of them jumped right into the next thing. And that was what they needed. That's what worked for them. And that's what made them happy. That's not what I felt like I wanted to do. You know, so I don't know that I would give, you know, what my choice was as advice. But
you can give your perspective on it.
It was good for me. It currently is good for me. If I were advising someone, I would probably tell them to do it a little differently than I'm doing it, which is, you know, get your resume finalized, get offers, you know, or, you know, get applications out, seek a few offers, and then, you know, maybe take your time accepting one, you know, to be a little more ahead of the curve and cover your bases. I think that's probably a good approach. But for me, I just wanted to take a little time.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a little time.
Good. Thank you.
I really don't think so. I mean, look at me 6 months later. Anyways. You're an awesome dad to three really boys. You know, what are some of like the joys and challenges of raising three boys? That's a lot. It's a handful.
Yeah. I'd say one of the joys is seeing them as they go through different milestones, you know, as hard as it is to see them grow and not no longer be that little person who needs you and who just is like, you know, you're their world. It's so nice to see each milestone, like, you know, starting with my oldest who's 17 now and he's driving and he has
bananas.
And he has, he, you know, we got him, an inexpensive, you know, old car.
Nice.
It's a 2002 BMW 3 Series, which is just like my race car.
I'm done. You'd be like, you know, you have like a priceless car here, right?
So, but we got that car for the low, low price of $600.
Oh, I love that.
From friend of a friend at the BMW car club. So it was a, you know, great deal. We couldn't, you know, pass it up.
Not at all.
But he has his own car that he loves. And it reminds me of when I was 17 and got my own car. And just seeing him, you know, go through a lot of the same, you know, joys and challenges and learning experiences that I did at that age, and you know, going through that with him, it's, you know, that's been a real joy. And also as he grows and becomes a young man, you know, connecting with him, just not just like father to son, but human to human, you know.
How do you transition? That's what I'm saying. How do you define that line as
It's a little, there's just a little bit every day. There's no formula to it. There's no, you know, kind of decision tree for it. It's just, you know, each day I sort of feel it out. I never stop being his dad. I never stop kind of modeling what I believe is the right behavior for him. But as he gets older and more sophisticated and more mature and better at all of those things all by himself without me sort of reminding him, then I can sort of lay back and let him be him. And you know, it changes daily.
Wow.
I mean, certainly from month to month, but daily. You know, one day he could need a little more, you know, sort of parental influence. And then all of a sudden the next day he's got it figured out and I can kind of take a step back on that specific area. And that's just awesome.
Yeah. What I've been so fascinated about, especially with Jay, the 17-year-old, I just like how much he's grown. I mean, we would hope that, you know, that they grow, but I remember him being, you know, this awkward little kid, couldn't even look you in the eyes.
Same age as your little brother.
Same age as my little brother, Bray. And it's like, to see him just like grow, and especially my mom, she was like, oh my gosh, Jay just said hi to me and just like had this whole conversation. Right. Like she was so excited.
Yeah.
And so just like to see him grow, like from our perspective, we think it's awesome. So I can only imagine what, you know, what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I see it too. You know, of course, he's never going to be like shy like that around me, his dad. But I've, you know, when I observed him talking to neighbors, you know, and being you know, socially well adjusted to be able to do that. I was kind of like, wow, mm-hmm. you know, I remember our neighbor who used to live in that cul-de-sac over there. Yeah. He's a Spanish teacher at the middle school, Mr. Ochoa.
Yeah.
So, I remember. I remember the day that, you know, he always liked Mr. O and, you know, the day that he sort of started talking to him outside of school here in the neighborhood, when he would come over and hang out, that was when it really started. I think I attribute it back to that point when he started to see, you know, like an authority figure at school who's also a real person outside of school. And he was able to sort of make that leap from, you know, being polite and, you know, polite and sociable to a teacher and then doing the same thing to a neighbor, you know, and it was like from that point, that's when he started to be more of a young man than a big kid.
Was it something that you guys like practiced or talked about? Yeah, he just
caught on. I would say, of course, you know, 100 times over the years, I would say to him, I would remind him like, you like Mr. So-and-so, you know, be polite, say hello to him. And he would, you know, he was too young to do it or to get it at the time. But then it clicks. But, you know, eventually it clicks. You know?
I see the same thing with my little brother, Bray. Like, you know, when he was younger, he used to be a little shyer, a little more awkward. And then, like, as the years have gone on, I've been like, whoa, you're actually, you know, over here standing up for yourself, speaking eloquently. It's just beautiful to watch.
That's funny from the big sister's perspective. Because I have an older sister, and I'm sure if she were sitting with us, she would recall memories of me, you know, in that same situation, you know, learning those things. It's funny.
We just love it to see, you know, your family kind of becoming, you know, coming into themselves as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have two younger ones who are going to be following suit as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lance is 15. And then Luke is 12.
This. I can't deal.
Yeah. Pretty soon they're going to be all teenagers. And Lance is like 6 feet tall. I don't know if you've seen him.
No, I have not seen him.
When he stands next to me, he looks like he's almost as tall as I am.
Stop.
Yeah.
I must have not realized when we were looking at the solar eclipse the other day because.
Yeah. He's so tall.
That's crazy. That is crazy. Wow. And I mean, you know, Jay is going to be 18 next year. He's going to be an independent person going off to college, you know, starting his own life and, you know, as well as the other kids. What do you want your legacy to be?
My legacy?
What do you want them to remember, you know?
Well, I guess I guess I don't think of it quite in terms of, you know, there's a, you know, like sort of a cutoff point. And from this point forward, they'll remember a legacy of this. I would like to continue to, you know, have a close relationship with them that grows and evolves through the years.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, years down the road, when I'm no longer here and they're remembering me, then, then I guess, you know, that's more of like the legacy. And I guess at that point, I would just hope they remembered, you know, that they learned a lot from me and enjoyed spending time with me and that they, you know, miss me and, you know, recall all the fun times we had.
What's the biggest lesson you want them to keep though?
One of the biggest things that I try to instill upon them is to be kind to each other, right? They're three brothers and they sometimes fight and sometimes they fight like nasty and like, it's like they hate each other and they're like gritting their teeth and saying, I hate, you know, this brother. And I've always tried to, you know, to sort of kind of cut through that and work around it and remind them how important they are and will be to each other, even years down the road. I'm very close with my sister.
And so it's just the two of you?
It's just the two of us. So no matter what happens in life, you know, they'll always have each other and I try to instill upon them the, you know, that you know, their brothers are a gift to them and to cherish them and nourish that relationship and you know, to, stay close.
Exactly. Cause at the end of the day, families, you know, family's going to be all you got. And if you don't have your family, like.
Yeah. I see sometimes people who don't talk to their siblings as an adult. And I just think, wow, that's, you know, that's really unfortunate. You know, who knows?
Definitely could different circumstances.
Yeah. It could be,
you know, for a good reason, but I just feel like that's a loss.
Yeah, it hurts for sure. Yeah. Me and my siblings, there's five of us. And
that's, yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, even the two middle ones, like Eugene and Aurelia, they used to like not like each other, but that's just because they were young and, you know, whatever. But now it's like we're tight, you know, we're all tight and we have to be.
I think that's good parenting also, is siblings getting along well.
Yeah.
You know, I think there could be exceptions, but I think whenever I see siblings who don't speak, I always think, you know, what happened there?
You know? Okay. You recently went through a separation, you know, how has it been raising your kids with your ex-wife?
I would say, you know, it's going pretty well overall.
Yeah.
So she moved to a house not too far away. Mm-hmm. So that makes it logistically fairly easy because we can, you know, drop the kids off. We alternate weeks. We always had our differences, but I think in the important things, you know, taking care of the kids, making sure they have what they need, that kind of thing, the basics, the fundamentals, you know, we're on the same page still. So, while the marriage didn't work out, you know, I think as co-parents, we're making it work to the best that we can.
Yeah. Has the separation kind of changed the way you look at relationships and life?
Oh, so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I learned is that in a failed relationship, the next person you see, it would be a mistake to think that, you know, the right person is the opposite of that person that didn't work out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's very easy to think, oh my God, you know, she was, all these things. So next I want all of those things,
like,
you know, the opposite of the spectrum. So whatever it is that doesn't work out, there's also going to be a lot of elements to that person that were right.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the important thing is to really, you know, kind of soul search a little bit to what you did like and what attributes did work for you, as well as what didn't. And then, kind of get an understanding, refine your understanding of what works for you in a person and continue to seek it, you know.
How do you not become like jaded? Because you have to
get out before you do. That's the thing. If you get to that point where you're so resentful and so I won't say broken, but so wounded from that relationship, then I think you can get jaded, and I think you can carry that baggage and drag it on to the poor next unsuspecting person you kind of match up with. So I think that you have to sort of, I can remember relationships with my ex where it was like, we need to be separated now before I don't like you anymore.
Wow. Yeah.
To put it kind of like that, like right now I can still get along with you, but we're heading on that road where I'm not even want to deal with you. And we need to move on before we get to that point so that we can have at least an amicable co-parenting relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but you know, if you are jaded, then I think the best thing you can do is to go to therapy and talk to someone who is skilled, at working through that with you and helping you make, odds of it and make amends with it and move on healthy.
What did you do to kind of help yourself heal from that relationship? Because I can imagine it was hard.
I have some close friends who I can talk to. So I found them to be tremendously helpful. But I'm also a very self-reflective person.
Okay.
So I've learned over the years to sort of work through challenges in my mind in myself work through them. I think sometimes you can do that, and some people can do that.
Yeah.
But other times it's bigger than you can figure out yourself.
I was going to say, have you always been like that? Have you always been like pretty introspective? And
in my 20s, I had, you know, times where I, you know, went to therapy and learned a lot.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's a great process. It works. Mm-hmm. And you have to be open to it. You have to be trusting of it. You have to, you know, be willing to kind of go to dark places sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, once you learn the process a little bit, then, you know, like any other skill you learn, whether it's, you know, a hobby, you know, racing, shooting, scuba diving, once you learn how to do it, then you can sort of navigate it on your own a little better. Yeah. You don't need the guide forever and ever more.
Yeah,
I think part of a good therapist is teaching you those things to work out on your own. You know, if they're, it's like parenting, you know, if all parents ever do is just do the thing for their children rather than teaching their children to do it themselves, they're never going to go, you know, off on their own and learn and do it themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good therapist is like a good parent. They're sort of teaching you how to figure this stuff out and work through it yourself.
I love that. So that's really good. And now you have a supermodel girlfriend. How did you guys meet?
Bumble.
So me and my boyfriend met.
Yeah. How about that?
That's awesome. So she swiped on you.
She did, yeah. Oh, yeah, can you imagine?
Aaron, I don't think you know how handsome you are.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So she swiped on you and then you guys got to chatting. Mm-hmm. And then when did it get offline?
So we chatted a little bit, but so she didn't love the idea of online dating. So it actually went like this. So we chatted in the app and, you know, I think we both were enjoying chatting, but then she sent me a message and immediately deleted the app. And the last message she sent me was, I'm really enjoying talking with you, but I really don't like this app. I'm getting all these messages from like crazy people.
Yes.
And here's my number. Text me if you'd like to continue talking. And I was like, of course. Yes.
It's a real test right there.
I definitely would like to continue talking. But, you know, so, you know, we met and, you know, there was, you know, chemistry and passion and, you know, things were great right from the start.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I was the only date she went on. And some of her friends were like, what are you doing?
You know, you're going to try one date,
you know. But, you know, you know, I don't think online dating was her cup of tea.
Yeah.
But, hey, it was, you know, at least it was a way that we met. Because I don't, you know, she lives in Fort Lee and she's a veterinarian. You know, yes. I don't think our circles would have really overlapped, you know. So it was kind of a long shot for us to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, you know, say what you will about online dating apps and everything, but, they certainly are good at bringing two people together who probably would not have had the opportunity to meet
under
normal circumstances. So
I say that all the time with me and my boyfriend. I'm like, there's no way I would have ever met you unless we were both on Bumble.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember I was like specifically looking for a certain type of guy. And I was like, you know what? You're the only one who matches. Boom. Yeah. And then I was done because I was so sick of like all those different, you know, going on these different dates. And it's exhausting.
And there's something to be said for, I don't think it's the end all be all, but there is something to be said for some of those like, you know, attributes matching up, you know, like I'm looking for someone who's about this height and about this age.
Oh no.
And you know, or this sign, or you know, people have all their list of things
they
that they're looking for. And sometimes, you know, all of that amounts to still not having an interest in the person in real life. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, having a lot of those logistical things aligned, and then you meet and there's chemistry, you know, that's you know, you're sort of, you've got a head start in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you've met people in your life where you're like, I'm so drawn to this person, but they're so wrong for me.
Exactly.
And in like 100 ways.
Yes. In a thousand different ways.
So with the apps, you can kind of, you know, maybe get a little ahead of that too. Mm-hmm, so I think that's helpful.
I remember on the apps, and I don't care if I say this, I was specifically looking for a black man. And so, like, he was literally the only one who would pop up on this app. I'm like, where are they? And so, where are they? I live in in Jersey City. Like, I know there's more of y'all.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I saw him, and I was like, this is it. And then I was, like, done with the app. And then luckily, we made it happen.
Yeah.
So that's why I love the fact that your girlfriend was like, I hate this. Here's my number. Yeah. If you're interested, you will message me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I did.
And yeah, I mean, and she's amazing. Like we're very much in love, you know?
What is it that you love so much about her?
So I love her passion.
Yeah.
I just love how we vibe together. You know, I love how, you know, we sort of have a similar way of relating to things. Yeah. You know, we both like adventure, but we also both like to relax.
Good.
You know, it's that balance. And you know, to be honest, like I've also evolved and grown a bit, even in the time that I've been dating her. You know, I think, you know, getting back to like, how do you not be jaded and how do you, you know, all move on and all that kind of stuff. I think it's very important to, accept that you have to continue to evolve and grow.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 50 and I don't think for one second that like, oh, I'm fully, you know, formed and don't need to make any changes or adjustments in how I am or how I relate to people. You know, that's craziness. And I think both of us, you know, see ourselves as a work in progress and, you know, part of a relationship, and we're willing to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've learned, like, I've also been reading some books on this too. So it's not like I'm just, you know, figuring this out organically from her, you know, but you know, a relationship is, it's not just you fall in love and then the end, right? It's like you fall in love and then you choose every day from that point forward to continue to do the work to maintain that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy. It's so easy to just get lazy and complacent and
blame the other person.
But you know, with your own stuff, it's so easy to just be like, you know, I'm tired. I don't want to do this thing that I know she likes for me to do every day or, you know, whatever it is. It's so easy to just let that creep in. But when it's someone you're like passionate about and madly in love with, you want to do those things. You want to see her smile and you know, be that person for her that she's like, oh, this guy loves me. This is like amazing. You know, this is great. He's the one I've been waiting for, you know? And you know, when you have that feeling that you want to give a person that and you see that they want to give you that, you know, that's special. And that's, I think that's why I like her so much.
Yeah.
Love her so much.
Oh my gosh, I love it. It's so beautiful. Has she met your boys?
Not in person yet.
Yeah.
You know, on the phone or in video chat sometimes, you know, they'll swing in and say hello. But, yeah. So that's coming soon.
That's coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to see you like looking giddy and like, you know, a teenager, like, and just like finding love again.
Yeah. I mean, it really does. I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was married.
So he's going to be miserable the rest of it?
Well, so much of life is what you make of it.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you have that outlook, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's true.
So I tend to try and keep a mindset that's in keeping with what I want it to be rather than feeling like, you know,
I feel my mortality.
Yeah. Well, then again, I'm Generation X and, you know, we like to say that it was like we were 30 when we were 10 years old and it's like we're still 30 at 50 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's just the nature of our generation.
Yeah. Y'all are wild. Oh my gosh. But no, it's going to be interesting. We'll see. I'm going to make the most of it. I'm kind of excited existential crisis. But at the same time, I think all of this is like in turn to like reframe my mind to like, okay, who are you? What are the things that are important to you? And how are you like, you know, going to prepare yourself for the future and go forward?
Yeah,
pretty much.
That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you'll be fine.
Appreciate it. All right. So looking ahead, what are your hopes and dreams for the future? First, personally, and then professionally, even though we did touch on it a little bit before.
So personally, I've got hopes and dreams with regard to racing and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but you know, nothing crazy, all just modest kind of goals. Relationship wise, I'm looking forward to, continuing on, the same path, and who knows what the future will bring mm-hmm. with those relationships. Professionally, what I'd really like to do is like I said, find a job in an industry that I'm more passionate with.
Exactly.
So
you can continue doing all your hobbies, going mudding and
right, that's right.
And riding your one wheel.
To be more clear, I think on the relationship thing, I'm sort of like thinking about it as I'm saying it. I think I would get married again.
That's gonna be my next question.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I've never been asked that, I guess, or I'm sort of thinking of it in real time. But yeah, I think I would like to get married again and just settle down with that right person. Yeah. So. And I think I found her. So
awesome. I will be waiting for the wedding invitation. I have my outfit ready. I love that.
So yeah, that's kind of my ambitions.
Yeah. And to wrap it up, if you were to give any advice to your younger self, what would it be?
Yeah, I guess I would certainly have some financial advice for my younger self. Save and don't ever like get into credit card debt or any of that stuff, because that's just can be crippling. Always save some money, have a cushion ready at all times in case something changes and you don't feel that pressure and that stress of not having a safety net. Right. So that's certainly something I would tell myself. But my younger self wouldn't listen, because I didn't listen to people when they told me that then. Why would I listen to myself telling me that? But the other advice I would give would be to probably, be aggressive with career moves early on to get into an industry that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it would be awesome if all this time I'd spent at Citi, it would have been somewhere else. And I climbed up the ladder in a company where I was super interested in it. I would probably give myself that advice too.
Yeah. Well, honestly, future you now, which is you now, is doing real well. You have like, it just seems like such a positive outlook on everything, you know what I mean? Personally, and just like looking forward. So I can't wait to see like what you do and where you end up. Honestly, I don't care what job you do. I just want to see like how happy you are, what you end up doing with the boys, how the boys do, and eventually getting invited to their wedding.
Thank you.
It was great. I've always admired, talking to you. We've always had the best conversations.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
So thank you so much for being like my inaugural host. I'm sorry, inaugural guest.
Oh, my pleasure. that's an honor. So happy to be here. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Aaron.
You got it.
Hey there, one more thing before you go. First, thank you so much for watching and listening. You didn't have to. You could have done literally anything else with your time. So I am so appreciative. Number two, if you liked what you heard or you resonated with anything, please like, comment, subscribe. Do all the things. All the links will be in the show notes so we can continue exploring this wild, weird, wacky, and awesomely wonderful world outside of work. You have a supermodel as a girlfriend? Oh, excuse me.
to me, she definitely is, yeah.